This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, fasten your seatbelts for a rollercoaster ride through the hearts, minds, loves, hates, thoughts, fears, hopes and dreams of Irish adolescents, and prepare to be amazed.
Dear Gwich agus Fáilteach Telling Tales, I'm Alice Dunn.
And I'm Aaron Rowe.
And we'll be presenting today's programme.
This is our last programme in the series of Telling Tales, your stories and poems ready to go. And good luck to everyone who sent us material for the series.
We're getting straight down to work with a story from St Mary's Holy Faith Secondary School.
The Road Ahead Was Dark by Gabriella Vasilisu. I heard laughter at the back of the room. Sophie, is that you again? Asked Miss Johnson. No, miss, I said innocently. Stop lying, it's always you, screamed the teacher. But miss, it's not me. You can even ask Katie, I tried to argue. Stop being so cheeky. Detention for the whole of next week, shouted Miss Johnson angrily. This is how another terrible week with Miss Johnson started. Why is it like that? Why is it just me? I heard no one likes the first years, but all the other teachers and students are really nice. In her class, I am always the only one accused. At dinner, my mom noticed there is something wrong. What will I tell her? I'll see what happens tomorrow. Back at school, Miss Johnson's class, hoping nothing will happen. Sophie, what are you doing? Leave your stupid notebook alone and tell me the answer, said the teacher with a slight anger in her voice. Miss, I told you yesterday I didn't understand how the rocks are formed, especially the metamorphic, and you said to stop lying and stop asking stupid questions in class, I said with anger. Everyone in class laughed. You're giving me cheek again. Up to the front of the class, give me your hand, she said in an annoyed voice. Unsurprisingly, everyone gone quiet now. But miss, that's against school rules, shouted Katie, trying to defend me. If you don't shush, I will send you to the principal's office, said the teacher. And if everyone else says something to their parents, principal, or anyone at all, this will also happen to them. Sorry, miss, said Katie in a scared voice. Now, where was I? Oh yeah, Sophie, come here now, she demanded. I went up and it happened, and it wasn't the first time. Now I'm on my way home with a rent hand, hoping no one will see it. Back at home, Mum saw it and asked what happened. I had to tell her. I had enough of it. It's been 7 months and the teacher didn't stop. I thought maybe, but no, she carried on. My mum is ringing the school now. I'm upstairs trying to not think about it, as my mum said. My dad said he will sort it out. I don't want to go to school tomorrow, but I've already missed lots of days. Next morning, my mum and dad had a meeting with the principal and Miss Johnson. So we had a free class, as Miss Johnson's class was the first class in the morning. After they had finished the meeting, the principal called me in. While Miss Johnson was coming out, she gave me the look and start screaming at me. I told you not to tell anyone, you. She couldn't get her words out. My parents were coming out, so they took her away from me, and then they started arguing with her. I had to show my hand to the principal and tell her the whole story. Of course, there was only me and her, no one else. She asked me lots of questions and said in a kind and friendly way not to worry about it. After a week, Miss Johnson was gone, and we had a new geography teacher, Mr. Adams. He's okay. Well, he's actually one of the nicest teachers in school. Of course, the whole school knows about it, but it's okay with me, so don't ask lots of questions or annoy me. I also go on therapies to help me deal with it and to help me catch up with all the stuff I missed or didn't understand. My parents said it's more of a teacher, but I know they say this just to make me happy and feel better about myself. The best thing of all is that the witch is gone, and she will never bully me again.
This upbeat, positive story from the Donaghy's Community School, Donaghmead, shows that anything can happen if you just believe.
The Road Ahead by Hannah Fitzgibbon, 2nd of April 2005. When I think about the future, I hope to become a Broadway star. I know those take a lot of hard work, commitment and determination. Instead of staying at home, I'm going to work on my dancing and singing a lot more to get me to the top. 25th of August 2015. I'm going to a stage school in New York and it's supposed to be one of the top 5 best schools in the world. I'm leaving in a week and I'm really excited, but I'm also nervous at the same time. I just can't wait to see the studios and the people. When I arrive, I'll be met at the airport by a teacher who will bring me to my accommodation. I cannot wait to see New York, the Empire State Building, the Statue of Liberty and Ground Zero. I will miss my hometown very much. I've grown here, it's a huge part of me. I've lots of friends here at home, but hopefully I'll make some new ones in New York. 27th of March 2016. Today is the day I leave to go to New York. All my friends and family are here to say goodbye. I feel sad when I glance at my friends, but I am filled with so much joy. Hannah, your taxi's here, my mum said with tears rolling down her eyes. My parents want me to fulfill my dreams. Big Apple, here I come. I'm ready to take a big bite.
The Museum by Caitlin Hogan. Saoirse looked down at the dinosaur skeleton in the museum and stared at it in awe. It was a pterodactyl. She was just about to turn around and walk away, but it bent down slowly, came face to face with her, and made a big roar. She screamed and it echoed around the museum. She ran and ran and ran.
We're taking a short trip to our Poets' Corner to see what's happening there.
Hi Alice, we're all in buoyant mood here and looking forward to the holidays. Our first poem today comes in from St. Aidan's, CBS, and fits perfectly with our mood today. Holiday Poem by Joshua Sobtin. Holidays are great, moving from place to place, until they depart your date with a hefty suitcase, flying on a jet with the world beneath. Thinking, am I there yet? I can't wait to leave my seat. Arriving in the blistering heat, exploring high and low, with many wonderful foods to eat. Now I'm on the flow. Now I must vacate my home, so I can go and visit Rome.
This poem from Our Lady of Mercy College, Beaumont, is a great example of the type of things that go through our heads all the time. I Wonder by Sophie Kearney Madden. I wonder about dragons. I wonder about space. I wonder about aliens and the human race. I wonder about birds. How do they fly? I wonder about the ocean and the clouds in the sky. I ask a lot of questions. Could they be true? Some people think so, but I'll leave it up to you.
We're always delighted to receive stories, Oscar Elgott, and our next story from Manor House Rohini is definitely archival material.
Joseph Padre Gosherton, La Rosanna Nivrin. Hi, is Miss Rosanna Nivrin August Freslim Air School Hyokon Vonner Ira Einig? Show a Miscale Fimahin Hanaher. Joseph Padre Gosherton on Tanamata Ermahin Hanaher. Ruga A. Malia Oclius of Lean Ne De Gogsado. Kuya Clon Air Emerka Go Canada Air Fad Couple of Lean August A. Agfasinis. Hanik Sheed Arash Savlin Ne De Gisadoyeg. Marshin, Neil Joseph Padre Gosherton, Aaron Day Nairiv, Savlin Ne Deg is a Hain, No Savlin Ne Deg is a Hain Deg. Neradil Shea or Era, Kui Shea Shock Ivina Aaron, Agriak Devukli Olga Akur Sim Sasersha. Glock Shea Parts the Smuggler Oct Gunny Imin Ager, Aaron Shea Loss Fiha Devitil, Ne Deg Keradeg. Vishay Fos in Aval Defina Aaron in Ne Deg Shea Deg. Vishay Carablina Deg Dish, Ire Shockton Nakoska, August Glock Shea Part Down. Dumper Shea Choctor Octi, Idrina Hotchin a Diffrula in a Rev on Trid. Uber Anadon Sherrock Vian, August Runner Boy on Las Anima Vier. Don Shea Afina Aaron Teresh on Iria Mock. Glock Shea Part Igogan Asertia, Ochnir Glock Shea Part Sakoga Kaharka, Marnir Hastig Ui Trid La of Winter Fane.
It's amazing. Both Manor House Rohini and Our Lady of Mercy College, Beaumont, have been great for sending in stories and poems, Oscailge. Gura Míle Maagat.
Now we're heading for a story from Art School LaSalle.
The Road Ahead Was Dark by Jenny, read by Kate. The rain has no end where I live. Constantly hearing the rain drizzle down the windows. The patter of water in our back pond was very loud. Sometimes I find it hard to get to sleep. Sometimes it would flood over and ruin our dying daffodils. Considering we could not grow them in these conditions, we had to keep tails against our porch door to ensure no rain would seep through to our wooden floors. More than 2 blankets were definitely needed to keep them warm each night, and always have your socks on. Our county has endless fighting leagues in which soldiers from the other side of the world would come into our country and fight against us Irish. The thoughts were horrible, having to stay in them floods for weeks and weeks. I always wondered what they did all those days. They weren't fighting. They had no communication to family or games to play. Sometimes a man would potter around the houses and try and find a young man old enough to join the army and fight like the other guys. Last year, I just barely got past it, but this year I'm 18 years old. And when they come around in a few days, I'll be told to pack my stuff and go with them without a fuss. We have no choice. It's either refusing to fight and be killed or die fighting. My mom and dad are terrified about this. My dad was severely sick when he was 18, so he wasn't fit enough to go. My 2 sisters don't want me to leave, and my younger brother is petrified he's next. All the family has been through this. My 2 cousins are there now, and my friend Nick is there too. I try to think positively that I am going to do this right. I'm going to fight for justice. The thought of dying is so much more powerful than the will to believe in surviving. The day I had to leave, I packed my bags and left my family behind, tears rolling down both our faces. With me not being the person to shed a tear, it was surprising. We had to do army camp and train shooting and surviving and doing conditioning to keep fit. It was all so much to handle, and we barely got any sleep. Our only day off was a Sunday, in which we had an hour to write a letter to a loved one or go to the shower room and relax. It was difficult to keep up, and my family sometimes didn't reply, which worried me. Then a few months later, I was sent to fight. I was sent to the full-blown army camp where we killed people and we fought to defend our country. I was only a few weeks out there when I got shot. I was brought to hospital a few days later when it was safe, but it was too late. I slipped into a coma. My family and I was in this state for more than 45 days, and at this point, there was little chance I would survive. Hope would never leave my mother, she said. She prayed every day and every night by my bedside. My dad would drink to relieve his stress, but that triggered his anger, and he wouldn't take it out on people around him. My mother got diagnosed with anxiety and began to be depressed. She wouldn't go anywhere but the hospital or our home. She stopped driving, so my dad would have to drive her. This was rare, as he wasn't at the house much. He was in the pub almost every hour of every day. My brother was to turn 16 this year, and due to lack of men in the army, they were recruiting 15-year-olds. So this year he was to fight, and me being in this state didn't help his fears. Meanwhile, my dreams were hectic. I could feel everything going on. I could hear every noise, every scream, and could sense the tension of my family as they entered and left the room, talking to a spiritless body. As the days went on, I could feel myself getting deeper into the matter, and there was nothing anyone could do. I felt so close to just letting go and going to a better place, as my nan said before she left us. And every day the light got brighter into the mist in the tunnel. But then this one day the light closed, and the darkness became darker and darker, until one day the road ahead was dark and I snapped back to reality as I opened my eyes. The only person beside my bed was my little brother, dressed in his army gear. His head saluted, and as I tried to say something, he waved to me and walked towards the guards, bringing him to the army camp to train and continue the dream we both had, to bring Ireland to peace.
What poems have you got for us now?
I think this poem describes everyone's house when we're trying to get out to school in the morning. Morning, by Maeve Keaton. Mornings, rushing to and fro. Where are my socks? Where did they go? Look, just give me the cornflakes back before I give you a right whack. Where's my lunchbox? Where's the milk? Watch it, sister, that scarf's silk. 10 minutes until I'm late. No, wait, 9. Oh, now it's 8. Rushing, running out the door. 6 minutes, 5 minutes, now there's 4. Whew, I'm just on time.
Well, it certainly described my morning routine. Now to our last poem, Oscuelga, Cog na Saoirse, Chloe Walsh. Fi sé mol agus first nocht in a cosca. Lamuk urha durha, fulla ar an talov. Arika marv pashti, gom fa ira, star I marta. Ir food na erin, kun na plashk, quiv na Saoirse.
Back in the weird and wonderful land of stories, this detective escapade from Maryfield College, read by Ruth Colbert, is sure to keep you on edge.
Take the First Shot by Bronwyn McDonough. My mouth was dry and my heart beat so hard I thought it would burst from my chest. My palm was sweaty against the cool grip of the gun. A loud ringing noise echoed in my ears. I sat up, debris was falling from the interior of the house. I quickly stood and gazed at my surroundings. Officers and citizens lay wounded from the explosion. I lifted my radio up and spoke into it. This is Detective Lily Bennett, reporting at 1080 at 23 Bradbury Drive. There are multiple casualties and officers injured. Send ambulances and backup. I frantically looked for Michael. Michael was right behind me before Cole kicked in the door. Then I spotted Michael over by the structure of a window. Broken glass lay around him. I stumbled over to him and tried to help him, but he signaled that he was wounded. I found a shard of glass protruding from his leg. My hearing started to come back as the ringing noise dies down, and I could hear bystanders crying for help. I looked at my clothes and realized I was covered in dust. He was supposed to be here. Where could he be? I mumbled under my breath. The ambulances pulled up and paramedics rushed to the aid of the victims of the explosion. Michael looked up. He must have known we would have come here first. I'm going to look around the house, make sure everything wasn't destroyed, I said, as I stepped through the doorway into the darkness. My eyes adjusted to the gloom. I pointed my gun out ahead of me, ready to shoot, and inched into the living room. Most of it was annihilated by the explosion. The rest was barely in one piece. Sifting through the debris with my foot to see if anything of importance was left there, all I found was rubble. I searched the bedroom, the kitchen, the dining room, and the toilet, and it was like no one had lived here for the past year, never mind a week. I thought back to when we started this case. Skye, Cole, Michael, and I had arrived at a crime scene where a woman named Audrey Jones, mid-20s, was murdered and the body was dumped in an alleyway. We had investigated her family and friends. However, no one had a record, and most had a foolproof alibi. Until Skye found fingerprints of Tyler Jackson, one of Audrey's ex-boyfriends, on the murder weapon, which was disposed of not too far away from the crime scene. I gathered myself and thought of where else Tyler might be. I picked up my radio. This is Detective Lily Bennett. Could you put me through to Detective Skye Watson? It's urgent. Yes, Detective, patching you through, replied the police department. Skye's voice came through the radio soon after. Hello, Lily. Is everything all right? No, Michael is injured from the explosion and Cole is in intensive care unit. Also, Tyler Jackson is not here. Where else could he possibly be? I asked. Skye replied. We pinged his phone and got his location. He is in an abandoned warehouse just down the road. I will send units there. They will arrive in about 20 minutes. Thank you so much, Skye, for all your help, I said. I heard Skye's voice saying, don't go alone, as the radio fell to the ground. Now, here I am, standing in front of the warehouse, gun in hand, ready to end this stupid case. I open the door silently. There are crates on tall shelves that reach the roof. I hear a voice speaking, to what sounds like a phone, not too far away. I follow Tyler's voice going deeper into the warehouse. What do you mean? The bomb worked right. No, I am not saying that. I trust you, don't worry. Okay, 1 hour. I have a visual of him. He has a crew cut and is wearing a t-shirt and jeans. I hold my gun out in front of me and take aim for his head. He turns and glares at me with the gun in his hand. "Drop the weapons and put your hands up," I yell across the warehouse. "You are alone, aren't you? I am guessing backup won't be here for a couple of minutes. Perfect amount of time for me to get out of here and then flee the country." He speaks in a condescending tone. "Last chance, give yourself up," I say. "You know I can't do that," he replies, raising the gun to point at my head. I nod and take the safety off. Tyler does the same. One gun goes off. Bam.
Well, that definitely packed a punch. I think your story is up next, Aaron.
Pressure by Aaron Rowe. I pulled back my cue and prepared to hit the white ball. The pressure grew and grew. I was known as Ronnie the Rocket, the reigning snooker champion. This was touted in the papers as a match I couldn't lose. Thoughts raced through my mind. I tried to steady my trembling hand but couldn't. My young opponent was 100-1 to win, and as I observed his calm, confident demeanour, it sickened me. The audience stilled and my shirt collar seemed to tighten around my neck. As cleanly as I could, I pulled back my cue, squinted my eye, and struck the ball. Time froze. My thoughts turned again to the missing money, but I tried to push it out of my mind. I opened my eyes and to my delight saw my winning black ball rolling into the right corner pocket. Relief washed through my body as I felt a massive weight lift off my shoulders. Then horror struck. As if in slow motion, I watched in terror as my white ball moved across the green. I pleaded and prayed, but was completely powerless to stop my last chance plop neatly into the corner pocket. It was over. Eventually I looked up, ashamed to show my face to the astonished audience. Just as I turned to leave the room, I spotted two men wearing dark expressions, dressed in black, advancing towards me. As they closed in on me, thoughts of escaping flashed briefly through my mind. But I gradually realised that this was a match I was always going to lose.
Excellent. Well, Cara, do you have our last poems of the series ready for us?
We certainly do, Alice. Now we have a poem, and its theme is representative of many of the poems we've received across all schools. The Funeral by Leah. The family was dressed in black. The room was filled with roses. I stood in the corner staring, but nobody seemed to notice. Later, we bury the body. My parents cried as it was put into the ground. My sister wiped her teary eyes, while my brother stood and frowned. At midnight, I snuck out of the house. I was trying to be brave. And there it said my name and date of birth, imprinted on the grave.
This poem of Cult Seasons is a timely reminder that everything moves on. Seasons by Leisha O'Connor. Winter is coming, so is the snow, as well as the man who says ho ho ho. Spring is coming, so are the flowers, all the green grass and all the April showers. Summer is coming, so is the sun, absorb all the heat before autumn will come. Autumn is coming, so are the leaves, say goodbye to the animals, butterflies and bees.
The last poem of the series is a real classic, The Library by Julie Darry. There is a tremendous silence in the library, but in which book is there no noise? Studious vessels are oaken desks, felt a trifle, with the tomes of 1666. Boring cavities into page after page of A-grade answers with their eyes, leaving academics to rein their obsolete minds. Millennia worth of passion pulsating through veins of text, screaming inaudibly their art of language, only to be forsaken beneath a mantle of dust. The clock's hand strikes, the electric humming ceases, and the aging pages have lost one more day.
Thanks, lads. We've had so many brilliant poems throughout the series. I'm sure you're all looking forward to the summer holidays.
And now it's time for our last feature story. Life of Freddy is written by Patrick Kallur, a pupil at St. Aidan's CBS, and is read on his behalf by our fellow presenter, Robert Kiley.
Life of Freddy by Patrick Kallur. Freddy is an 8-year-old boy who dislikes school and fails every test or exam. He finds all subjects difficult and is belittled and berated by his teachers and classmates. But Freddy's internal world is full of wonders that he is unable to convey to others. Magical lands filled with colour and animated animals. He is an artist whose talent is unrecognised. His father is a successful businessman who expects his children to excel. His mother is a housewife. His older brother, George, is an exemplary student and athlete, which Freddy is frequently reminded of. After receiving a particularly poor academic report, his parents sent him to boarding school. Terry sinks into fear and depression. Despite being befriended by Brian, physically disabled and one of the top students in his class, Freddie's situation changes when a new art teacher, Mr. Sherlock, joins the school facility. Mr. Sherlock is a very kind and friendly teacher. He used to teach in a school for teenagers with developmental issues. He looks at Freddie's work and he realizes that he is dyslexic. He calls Freddie's parents to tell them that he is dyslexic and ask if there's anything he likes. He finds out that Freddie is passionate about art and is amazing at drawing and sculpting. He asks his parents why he was sent to boarding school. His father replies that Freddie was a poor student and was disrespectful. Mr. Sherlock tells him that Freddie finds it difficult to understand letters and words. Freddie's father dismisses it as a mere excuse for Freddie's laziness. Mr. Sherlock reminds him that Freddie has dyslexia and maybe other conditions. Freddie's father replies that Freddie was a poor student, but Mr. Sherlock tells him that Freddie is an above average child who takes in information differently. Mr. Sherlock returns to class and brings up the topic of dyslexia. He shows Freddie a list of famous people who are dyslexic. Later, Mr. Sherlock admits to Freddie that he too is dyslexic and has faced problems similar to Freddie. Mr. Sherlock asks the principal for permission to become Freddie's mentor. He tries to improve Freddie's reading and writing by using techniques developed by dyslexia specialists. Freddie soon develops an interest in language and maths. His grades improve. Towards the end of the school year, Mr. Sherlock organises an art fair for the staff and students. The competition is judged by a Banyu artist, Francis Alexander. Freddie, with his strikingly creative style, is declared the winner, and Mr. Sherlock painted Freddie's portrait, the runner-up. The principal announces that Mr. Sherlock has been hired as the school's permanent art teacher. When Freddie's parents meet his teachers on the last day of school, they are left speechless by the transformation they see in him. Overcome with emotion, Freddie's father thanks Mr. Sherlock. Freddie then says goodbye to all the teachers and gets into his parents' car to go away with them for the summer holidays.
Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. I hope we got to your stories or poem. If you didn't, better luck in the next series.
Don't forget to check out the Near FM website for full details on the programme. And of course, you can download a podcast of the whole series from the site.
We hope you enjoyed today's programme and all the programmes in the Telling Tales series.
We'd like to thank all the principals, teachers, hard press secretaries, readers and presenters for helping to make this series possible.
And above all, we'd like to thank every pupil who wrote a story or poem for the Telling Tales series. Because without you all, there'd be no Telling Tales.
Good luck to everyone sitting exams.
And a safe and happy summer to all our listeners.
Today's Telling Tales programme was produced by Enda M. Roach. Our BC is Miller Rodriguez, and the series is a Pearlman Media production for Near FM.
So from myself, Aaron Rowe.
And myself, Alice Dunn.
Until we meet again, slánga fóill.
This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland.